Well, it is an acquaintance rather than a friendship, but it's a very long acquaintance. I found Jean Genet again in Paris in 1949 when I came back from America, and reminded him that we had met in the 1930s. He at first denied it until I asked him if he didn't remember a boy who had the word fatalitas tattooed around his neck. And then, because he at first said, no, we couldn't have met because I was in jail during all of those years that you mentioned. And then when I reminded him of fatalitas, he remembered that at one time he'd been free for a matter of weeks or months or days, I don't know what. And I then didn't see very much of him, only very occasionally during those years, because I went back to Morocco in 1950, and it was actually in Morocco that I saw him again in 1969. And at that time, we saw rather more of each other, walking around Tangier and spending some long afternoons together talking. And he pointed out a Moroccan whom I had known by sight for a long time and had rather avoided because he always carried books under his arm. And I avoided Moroccans with books under their arms. None of my friends could read or write, either in Arabic or anything else. And I knew that this was the brand of rather sort of troublesome student. And Genet said to me, oh, I must go and talk to him because I gave him a wrong piece of information. He asked me the meaning of the red and the black as in the title of the Stendhal book. And whatever it was that I told him, I now feel that I had given him the wrong answer. So that's how we met Mohamed Choukri. That day I met him for the very first time. And I don't know if you've read it, but there's a very amusing little book called Jean Genet in Tangier, written by Choukri and translated by Paul Bowles. Most of the action in this little book occurs at Brian Geisen's house. And that was because very shortly after that, in the month of July, I had a motorcycle accident and lost some toes and was in a cast at home. But when I started getting out a little bit, I ran into Genet again at the Café de France. He was living in the Minza Hotel, the most expensive hotel in the city, and very proud to be able to do so, and to impose upon them his, his uncouth ways and his not very clean clothes. He was rather proud of the fact that he hadn't changed his clothes since he'd last seen William Burroughs at the Chicago Democratic Convention of 1968. And this was the summer of 1969, and he was still wearing the same shirt and the same jacket and the same pants, and said that he was rich enough to force an establishment like the Hotel Minza to accept him because he was both rich and famous. We had a long discussion about just how famous he was. It seemed to worry him rather considerably as to whether this fame would last. And we were sitting one day on the terrace of the Café de Paris again, and he said, well, you know, after all, nobody will read what I wrote 100 years from now, will they? And I said, well, they might very well. I don't think that the French language is going to change that much. That was always this very sore subject between us about language and the use of language and his very conservative use of the French language, which he says he respects more than any other living writer. This has brought about his present position where magazine Nouvelle Littéraire came out with a special issue about Jean Genet saying that he probably was the greatest French writer. So I said, yes, certainly you'll be around for 100 years. He said, do you think 200 years? And I said, well, maybe even 200 years. He said, well, not 1,000 years. Well, I said, well, no, who can say what's going to happen 1,000 years from now? But you can see that this preoccupied him very much. And seeing me in my plaster, and at that time I had a very handsome apartment, a penthouse that overlooked all of northern Morocco. I could see from on the right-hand side the Atlantic and the Caves of Hercules, right across the Rif Mountains and down towards Gibraltar, all of which I could see from my terrace. And he said, I think you're very lonely here. Well, I wasn't lonely there at all. I was surrounded by a group of people and a number of Moroccan friends of very long standing who were looking after me rather tenderly, in fact. But he said, I think you're very lonely, so I have decided that I will stay on in Tangier and I will come every day and spend the afternoon with you. And I said, well, that's absolutely delightful. I would be more than happy to have you to lunch every day. We have lunch here in my house at sort of Moroccan hours, which is 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And oh, he couldn't wait for lunch that long. He had to have his lunch at 12:30. So he said, no, what I will do is I will have my lunch at the hotel and then I will come here for mint tea afterwards. Well, the real reason that he felt that I was worth visiting was because he actually found my Moroccan friends very fascinating. He speaks reasonably good Maghrebi, that is the dialect of North Africa. He had lived he said he hadn't lived at all, he'd just been a captive of the army and had actually deserted from the French colonial forces during the time that he had been stationed in the south of Morocco when he had started to learn Arabic at that time. And he'd continued it through the years, and he found spending the afternoon with me was an excellent occasion to practice his Arabic. So that we saw each other rather more intimately, and as I say, every day for a month. A good deal of the conversation was in Arabic, but it was also between the two of us in French. And at my house at that time, somebody was stealing. And so I said, look, Jean, you are the great authority on theft. Who do you think of those present is the one who is managing to steal quite regularly in this house? It turned out that it was a black Moroccan friend of mine, and that was, he said, oh, he's the only one who couldn't possibly have been stealing it. Whether this was his prejudice for the panther type, I don't know, but he was always, to them, and in Arabic, calling himself a kelb, a dog. And he was a little bit shocked when they picked it up and in fact referred to him as the dog. I don't think that he meant the game to be played quite that way. But he was always saying, I am a thief, a pederast, a deserter, a traitor. And about at that same time, through another friend of mine, a writer, Sanche de Camon, I had become friendly again with the Claudels. Henri Claudel is married to a Greek lady whom I had known when I was 18 or 19, and I hadn't ever seen them again because I'm not very fond of those rather conservative circles, but they had been very kind to me when I had my motorbike accident and had come to visit me in the hospital, bringing their chef with them from the French embassy, as it had been, now just a legation. And had food sent. I was to ask the chef for anything that I wanted, and they had sent food to the hospital. And when they found out that Jean Genet was coming to my house every day at lunchtime, they were very keen to invite him to lunch. And he pretended to be utterly shocked. He said, what? They're going to invite traitors to the Maison de France now? And above all, the son of Paul Claudel. He said, oh, I think that would be too shameful for me to impose myself upon them. So he never did go to lunch at the French embassy. The relationship lasted through that whole summer, and I've really never seen him again so consecutively since.